So welcome to episode 4 of the Lace Bee podcast here from Shea Bee. We've now been 2 months in our new home and I don't think I've ever lived somewhere that I felt so happy in before. There's something about this house that just makes me smile as I walk around it. Before, if I was struggling, then I'd go sit with my craft supplies, but due to space, these are a couple of miles away in our storage. Often sitting amongst all the craft supplies, I'd be overwhelmed by the sheer amount of it. Here, I've made the conscious choice to be surrounded by the key things I want daily access to. I have two of my vast lace pillow collection here, my favourite round flat pillow and my large block pillow. The round pillow is one that was given to me by a lady who used to make lace and had stopped because her eyesight had gone. It was homemade and she'd made it for a course back in the late 70s. It's straw filled. Weighs a ton and I love it to bits. I have all my bobbins with me. In fact, we didn't bring them over the first night, they came the second, and I was quite uneasy about them not being with me that first night. The idea they'd be anywhere else but here was unthinkable. And we brought my yarn back to the house and put it in various hampers, drawers and the loft. As a child, the only people allowed craft items in our house were my eldest sister, who was going to be a great artist until she didn't get into art college. That's another story. And my father, who would quite literally take money from our food budget to buy his model soldiers. The rest of us were not considered to be creative enough. Yet my brother restores antique model railway trains now. And my other sister is an outstanding knitter, creating wonderful Faroe Isle items. Since I left home at 18, I found the space to explore my own creativity. It started with buying a few miracle beads from a shop in Covent Garden in the 1980s and making my grandma a necklace in Barbie pink, her favourite colour, that shone like a star each time the light hit them. Then a year or so into working for BT, I was encouraged to put some of my jewellery into the BT West London Sports and Social Club annual exhibition. I won a number of classes and was invited to visit Ealing Town Hall where the items were being shown and pick up my certificates, which I still have. Whilst there, I met a lady making lace who was setting up lessons under the social club. The idea with the social club was that BT would give money to your club and you could have time off work if you wanted to go and pursue it. One of my colleagues in the summer had every Wednesday off to go and play cricket for the local cricket lead. The Lace Club was granted funds to buy all the equipment up front, and then we paid a small weekly amount back, and after a couple of months, we owned our own equipment. I had an SMP pillow, and I had 10 pairs of bobbins, a spool of DMC 30, and a small packet of pins, and a pin cushion. And that was my starter kit. The club also subsidised the cost of the teacher. At this time, I was a lowly telephone engineer with limited money. After paying my rent and travel, I was living on tea, tomatoes and pasta most days. The good thing with my travel was that I had an annual season ticket. And that meant that I could go to the lace classes and not have to pay to come home in the evening because I could use it on my travel ticket. So being given access to learning a new skill by paying for my equipment weekly opened up an opportunity to try a craft I'd always been obsessed with. My mum was convinced that there was lace making in my DNA. I'd gone on about it for years. After careful research into our family, there's absolutely no connection to any lace makers at all. Although hubby's grandmother was headhunted from East Anglian silk mills to go to Malmesbury and work there in the silk industry, but that's a bit of a tenuous link. I think what was in my DNA was my maternal grandmother's quest for creativity. Grandma Ag, who Agnes, our cat princess, is named for, was an accomplished amateur artist. She particularly liked pen and ink sketching. She had a passion as well for calligraphy, and we would spend time together practicing our handwriting and trying out different styles. I have great memories of sitting at her dining room table with the sun coming through the window and practicing out different fonts while she had Edward Woodward singing songs from the First World War on her record player. Very strange choice of music. One time, I knocked over a pot of red ink onto a carpet. Instead of berating me as my father would have done, she mopped it up and gave me a hug. My mum's stepfather, who had his own struggles with mental health, hugged me and said that they'd been looking for a reason to buy a new rug and I'd just given it to them. I think of this because I always link these crafts with love. This is probably why, once I paid off my lace pillow and bobbins to the club, I left. The teacher was getting about £50 a week from us to teach, which in 1988 was quite a bit of money. This meant she was earning half of my take-home pay a month for 2 hours of week work. Slowly I realised that we were not a source of new lace makers to her, but we were a source of income. Don't get me wrong, people who teach crafts deserve a living wage, but this one was purposely holding us back so that we would keep paying her for lessons. It's a bit silly, isn't it? Because when you think about it, I've been making lace for 30 years and I still think I'm learning. Most UK lace makers start with torsion lace because it's geometrical, which helps you see where you're going. About 2 months into learning, I've seen a pattern for a small piece of Bedfordshire lace that would be perfect for my mum's doll's house. I asked my teacher about what skills I'd need to get to making this piece, and she told me it would take me absolutely ages before I was able to even think about tackling that piece. I knew then that it was time to learn from books and other people. Whenever any of my pupils ask me about wanting a piece of lace that they want to move to, I always give them the same answer. Let's look at the skills we need to develop in order to make this. And then we go find pieces that will give them the confidence to tackle the piece they want to make. Where I was living when I first learned to make lace, there was a small local group. I say small, actually. It seemed small at the time. There was only 60 members. These days, I think most groups would kill to have that number regularly meeting on a Thursday evening. Their lace days was so big that they were held in two different halls and then the suppliers were in the third one at the Methodist Church in Headingdon. There would be 400-500 people come for the lace day. At this time, I was travelling everywhere by bus and the journey between the venue and home was quite scary during the winter, with long walks either end to and from my bus stops. But unperturbed, I became a member of Headingdon Thumpers. I still have my little badge, which is half a lace thumper bobbin with Headingdon Thumpers inscribed on it. At my first meeting, they told me that whilst they didn't offer tuition, they were more than willing to help with any problems that I might run into. So I'd go with that piece of lace I was working on, and if I needed help, I'd ask around, and a different member each time would show me a trick or tip to get me moving. I still do a half stitch after I finish my lace leaf. I do the leaf, put the pin in, a little half stitch to cover the pin, as I was shown to do there over 30 years later. But more importantly, at that group, I discovered that stayed with me for a long time. When you meet up with other people who make things, they inspire you to create. It wasn't about wanting to make the same thing as them. It was about being around their passion and joy in what they were doing. I'd come home and feel I could give it my best shot. I remember being stuck at home, ill with flu. I'd woken up on a Saturday morning and thought I was basically dying. I was in bed ill for 3 days, going in out those strange delusional dreams you have when you've got a fever. On day four, I finally migrated to the sofa and sat watching daytime TV winding bobbins. Day five, I picked out a pattern, and on day six, I started to make the lace. By the time I went back to work 10 days later, after I was first ill, I had a complete piece of mixed lace, as it was described on the pattern. Basically, it was Honiton techniques, but using thicker threads to make a largish dragon. I'd seen one of the ladies at the group doing Honiton, and she showed me how to do 10 stick. And I'd filed that away in my mind for when I was going to have a go at it myself. Got out my book on techniques and worked my way through it. I have the piece framed and it's actually now sitting just behind me where I'm recording this on top of my bookshelf. And I made it because I could. When we moved to this house, I asked about evening meetings for yarn enthusiasts and found a lovely little group. Now, I'm not going to be making Terry Tactile anytime soon, even though he is totally famous. But every time I think of him, I just laugh, and it makes me want to make something myself. I've stored him away in my mind. Currently, we have Mavis the Sheep as the latest one that's been created, and she makes me laugh too. I'd love to have learned to knit at the knee of my mother or grandmother, but this was never going to happen. My grandma Ag was happy to draw and write, but yarn crafts were not her thing. She appreciated great craftsmanship, but was never enthusiastic to learn. On the other hand, she, her parents and her siblings all at some point earned a living from music, and she was an accomplished violinist, with her first job being the lady who played the sheet music at Harrods so you could decide if you wanted to buy it. She loved anything that I made for her and treasured each piece. My mum was the same. On a couple of occasions, she came with me to Lace Guild study days where there was a space free. She was adamant she would not take a place from a lace maker. And when she asked what lace was she made, she would reply that she was an enthusiastic supporter of the craft. I think that the DNA that she did pass down to me was my ability to hold masses of strange information in my head. When my father lost his eyesight, he decided that she should read to him. After the first couple of books on German flying aces of World War II, she became quite an authority on them and often had long conversations with my husband about them. And my father quickly tired of the topic, but she carried on reading them on her own, sneaking a quick read whilst he was having a kip in the afternoon. Mum became knowledgeable about the different laces and got very good at identifying them, the different stitches, the threads, and possible dates of manufacture. I feel her at my shoulders when I visit museums and look at the exhibits. I was recently looking back at one of my lace blogs from May 2021, when I looked at adult education in the UK. Link to this blog is at the end of the notes for this podcast. And the significance of adult education in the UK in its learning for all things. In it, I was musing on the closure that previous year of the WI Denham College and its move to online classes. And I wrote, Denham's ending after all these years must bring into question the long-term viability of residential courses. Little did I know that just 2 years later, Nuston Hall, where the City and Girls lace making qualification was actually launched back in 1987, would close this year. Northamptonshire, as part of the East Midlands, has been a centre for heritage crafts from its long association with shoemaking and lace making. In 2019, the popular Grendon Education Activity Centre was closed. A sad loss of these two centres within just 4 years has been, it has to be weighed against the problems that the countywide council has faced when in 2018 the government had to step in and appoint commissioners to take over the council, which in the government's inspector's report, which you can see online at gov.uk, stated that they were the result of poor management, a lack of budgetary control and a culture of discouraged challenge. As much as I want craft to have great access to learning through local councils to make it accessible, it's hard to push for that when there are massive holes in your roads and other local services are being cut. We're very lucky here. Just two buildings up from where I'm sitting, there is a local day centre run by a charitable trust that's open Monday, Tuesdays and Fridays to allow senior citizens access to a hot meal and social. It's open from about 10:30 in the morning to 2:30 in the afternoon. They pay a small fee and they get a hot meal and can chat and meet with people. But that's run by a charitable trust, which would have been local council a few years back. So we have to look at other ways to encourage people to be involved in crafts. Facebook groups, the beginner bobbin lace makers cannot say enough about how wonderful that group is and the work that Carmen's done to create it. Zoom catch-ups, which the guys do the bobbin ones for those at the weekends, and also face-to-face meets. Our local WI once a month has a craft group. Okay, only five people turn up, but you know, that's five people who wouldn't be able to meet otherwise. Whilst I can teach from my house anymore, I have happily given lessons at the county WI place and local craft groups. It's about finding your happy place that triggers you to create. I meet with Yvonne, Betsy, and Nicola on a Friday evening to get my buzz. You could watch The Great British Sewing Bee or Kirsty's Handmade Christmas on catch up, chat to people on Facebook, and share photos of what you've made. Even watch craft shopping channels to get ideas. Not feeling up to making something at the moment? Flick through one of your knitting or crochet books and just look at the lovely yarny things. Go play with your yarn stash. Catalogue it, put it on Ravelry. But whatever you do something that works for you. Have a great week. Bye.